Bradley Beal was okay. He was 50% from the field. He had 13 points. That Nicholson guy, he was okay too. He had 9 points off the bench.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody was solid, but in terms of, you know, really having an impact, I think the only one really can go to Morris. I mean, like you said, Beal had a solid, you know, somewhat of a solid game, but not really a whole lot of
Right.
impact, if you will. But I just feel like Morris's hands were all over that game. And,
Yeah.
you know, without him, it would have been really ugly.
Very true. Very true.
So yeah, you know, like I said, which I, you know, I have a couple takeaways from the game and want to make it clear that, you know, obviously you can't buy into all this stock. It's the first game of the season. Can't
Right.
be. There's just some interesting things that, you know, we can take from it. And you know, I guess and then we'll move on to, like I said, what are you expecting from Memphis in that game and what have you. So I mean, if you're ready to go, I'm ready to go. We can probably knock this out, you know, by 10, 15, 10, 20 if you want.
Okay, cool. Yeah,
That
I'm ready.
cool? All right. I'll start it up when I start talking. Obviously, we are live.
All right.
Welcome, everybody, to a second episode of the Wizards Windup brought to you by 1340 AM Fox Sports. As always, I am your host, Colby Giacobino, joined by my colleague and co-host of every Wizards Windup episode, Joshua Vinson. And for note, he is coming to you live from his car on the way to Memphis. This is what we do. We try to make an appearance at every single game that we can. So, Josh, I appreciate you, you know, taking the time and making that long journey.
Hey man, no problem, no problem. Yes, everyone, I'm pulled over on the side of the road. I'm not driving and texting or doing this podcast, but yeah, we are on our way to Memphis, Tennessee, as you just mentioned, 1340 a.m. We want to try to make an appearance at every possible game that we possibly can go to. And Memphis, Tennessee is not too far away from Chicago, where I'm based out of. So I decided, hey, let's go on down to Memphis and you know, see exactly what the Wizards will do tomorrow night. That game will come on, I believe, 7 p.m. Central. So that's 8 o'clock Eastern game, if I'm not mistaken, out in Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah, and you know, it should be a good one. But of course, you know, we're starting off on a little bit of a somber note for this episode. The Wizards did, you know, take a loss, 114-99, at Atlanta against the Hawks Thursday. You know, I guess just let's just get right into it, Josh. What were kind of your takeaways? I guess give me two or three, and we'll kind of dissect each one and go into it a little bit. But you know, your thoughts on the loss, obviously, just for the people who maybe have missed the game, very, very close game heading into the fourth quarter, 81-80. Wizards trailed by 1 point. And then it just opened up in the fourth quarter. You know, careless turnovers, Wizards couldn't hit a shot. They were outscored 33-19 in the fourth. So the Hawks ended up walking away with a 15-point victory. Josh, what were your takeaways?
You hit the nails on the head, man, on every subject. Yes, this game was close the entire time. You look at the box score. The Wizards were only down by two at the end of the first. They actually outscored the Hawks at the second, and they were both had 24 points at the third. So you're right, it was 81-80 going into the fourth quarter. Very tight game. The first takeaway was the implosion of the second unit. I mean, they just imploded. The offense was terrible. The turnovers were terrible. I believe Scott Brooks said that Atlanta got 13 points on 8 turnovers by the Wizards in that fourth quarter alone. They could not do anything in the fourth quarter. And so he had to hurry up and rush his first unit back in, but the damage has already been done. So when you talk about takeaways, one of the first things I want to point out is I like the fact that the Wizards, they came into Atlanta knowing what they were up against. It was Dwight Howard homecoming. They played Atlanta very, very closely. So that's a check in their column. But that second unit, that was awful. That's something that we're definitely going to have to dive into. And then lastly, We're not going to see nights like this all the time, but John Wall was not up to his best either. He what shot 20 almost 20 25% from the field. At one point in time, he had no field goals, and all he had was assists. So those are the three main takeaways: the poor performance by John Wall, the poor performance by the second unit, and just the fact that the first three quarters, the first 32 minutes of the game, they actually played the Hawks pretty closely. But what happened in the fourth? I'm not really sure. Maybe they thought the game was over with. I hope they don't do that in Memphis tomorrow night, because you're not going to win games like that.
Yeah, well, I think there was a couple things building off what you said with all these takeaways. Specifically just jumping on your last point with the fourth, I think it was a mixture between the bench team or the bench rotation, just playing lackadaisical, and it was another like the Hawks starters for the most part were in for that point of the game against. You could just tell there was a huge difference in playmaking ability and what have you. It almost just seemed like, they were just taking the ball from the Wizards at will. And the thing about it was that was hurting is they were scoring within about 3 or 4 seconds of turning them over. I mean, it was a quick, it was a quick steal. I remember one possession. I think it was a deflected pass. Sefolosha maybe deflected it, and then there was a fast break. Hardaway, excuse me. Hardaway sprints to the corner, bangs a three. Sefolosha takes it from, I couldn't remember, I'm slipping my mind. Takes it from a Wizards player, runs down, easy dunk. Like it was just, it's stuff like that. And then when you put in the mind that the second group was struggling so much offensively to put the ball in the hole, those points add up quick. The deficit rises very quickly and it gets ugly. But no, I'm with you. That second rotation is definitely concerning. Now, like I was telling you before we went live, it's the first game. People are still trying to get their roles and what have you, under control and trying to get them understood. What really caught my eye and that I didn't understand is why Marcus Thornton got so much time and why they turned to him. Marcus Thornton, obviously a veteran of this league, he's one of those players that are known for being, when he's hot, and when he's not, he's not, and he's terrible. Very inefficient, takes bad shots. He's not a calming presence on the floor whatsoever because, he feels like he always, the only way he can impact the game is by shooting. So what's he gonna do? He's gonna continue to shoot. And the reason why I bring him up is because Thomas Cederansky only got 4 minutes, and those
Yeah,
were
he
pretty
did.
much, in garbage time when the game was already decided. I just thought I saw a lot of things that I liked from Cederansky in the preseason, and I just thought he may have earned more time. Now it's the first game. I think Brooks will still go with Thornton for maybe the next week or so, but if he keeps putting on performances like he did, obviously on Thursday, he's going to find his seat on the bench moving down very quickly, and I think that's when Satoransky will finally get his opportunity. I think Satoransky will take advantage of it as well. I think
Sure, for sure.
I think he can bring a lot to the table. Like we saw in the preseason, he's like the Swiss Army knife. He can do a little bit of everything in every category. So that was an issue. Another thing I saw, because obviously I wasn't there covering the game, you were, but I saw some after, post game quotes that Trey Burke was kind of struggling to get the plays out to, the offense. I saw some things that maybe the crowd was loud. I get it. Opening night, every arena is going to be a little bit energetic, but it's concerning because this isn't, the Oracle. This isn't, Oklahoma City's arena. This isn't Cleveland. Like these arenas, Atlanta, I'm sorry, Atlanta has a great fan base. They're very passionate, but they, like the Wizards, have had trouble trying to get people to games. So this isn't, a very energetic environment and hard to play in environment that he was around. So that kind of concerns me. We definitely have to see that improve. And then, of course, another takeaway, which, it's all negative, but hey, they lost and they crumbled in the fourth. Like you said, John Wall, his shooting performance was horrific. And I mean, the only reason why I'm not concerned is because I've seen him hit those shots before, a lot of coming off the screen and rolls. He gets those mid-range 15, 18 footers. But what I was thinking during the game was you know, people have the conversation of who's a top point guard in the league, and you know, that doesn't really determine on how good of a team the Wizards are. But in terms of the John Wall argument, everybody is so quick to say, well, he can't shoot. He can't shoot. That's all they say. And you know, he did improve last year a lot, especially even shooting out to three. But you know, seeing games like this, 3 for 15, it just fires up that argument once again. And you know, everybody's gonna have an off game, but you know, the good thing is he still had his impact in the assist
Oh,
column.
for sure.
You know, so like you said, you know, there were some bright spots off the bench. I mean, the thing is, they came in. I think between Trey Burke and Andrew Nicholson, they hit the first three shots, and then after that, it was pretty much nothing. You know, Oubre, one play that I wanted to highlight really quick. I can't believe I'm forgetting all the time who they're guarding. He's either guarding Hardaway Jr. or Sefolosha, pressing him ridiculously out on the perimeter, doing a great job pressuring the ball, very aggressive on this one defensive play. And then, you know, so he sinks off for a second, he cuts him off. Sefolosha or Hardaway Jr. tries to drive, he cuts him off. They go back towards half court, and then Oubre feels the need to go up and pressure him and check him with his hip, and it's a foul. And you know, at that point, there was like 9 or 9 seconds left on the shot clock. He played great. I mean, he looked like in that particular possession, he looked like an elite on-ball defender. And then he goes and mixes it up. That's the growing pains that he's still going through. And he's admitted that he needs to calm down at certain points. But no, like you said, so the takeaways, the bench underperforming by a whole hell of a lot. You know, bad shooting by John Wall, and you know, by most of the players in that. And another thing that I think you need to take it away from is now when Gortat was on Howard, he played good defensively, but Howard was just a man on the boards, and that's an issue that the Wizards have always struggled with, you know, rebounding. So I look to, you know, we said this in our first episode. A lot of, you know, rebounding is a stat that is always overlooked, but can always decide the game. And I think that's something that, you know, we really need to concentrate on. So I mean, Josh, if you have any other takeaways, you know, from the opening loss, feel free to add them. If not, we will move into the Memphis conversation. But I just want to see if you had anything else to add.
I mean, yeah, for sure, I definitely want to highlight one of the good things of the game, and that was because Morris did have 22 points. So we definitely want to make sure that we highlight the fact that Morris played a pretty, you know, decent game. Outside of that, like you're right, I don't believe that every night we're going to have Bradley Beal going 3 for 15. I don't believe every night he's going to go 3 for 15. But I think Scottie Brooks is definitely going to have to take a look at that second unit, and he mentioned that in Atlanta, and see how that he can get that second unit to play better, because your first unit is not going to go out there and play 48 minutes. So you're definitely going to have people to be able to come into the game and either maintain the lead or keep you within distance. Sometimes some teams, their second unit actually get them back into the game. We've seen that, I mean, over the course of the game, right, where they're the second unit to come in and you just have that guy off the bench and he's just lighting fire. I mean, look at Atlanta, Tim Hardaway Jr., you know,
Yep,
for
that's what I
example.
was just about to say.
He had what, 21 points, 8 for 13, and everybody in Atlanta was talking about how they're happy to see him out of his shooting slump. And that's another takeaway. The bench of Atlanta's, you know, versus the bench of Washington, it was no competition. Just check out some of these numbers. You had Hardaway had 21 points. Sefolosha had 13 points. I mean, when you look at the numbers on the Wizards bench, nobody was in double digits.
No,
Nicholson came close. He had 9 points.
and I think McClellan, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think he may have finished with 7 or something like that. And
Yeah, he did.
they were all in the final 4 minutes. Like I said, the game was already decided. Don't want to take anything away from him, but you know, at
Right.
that point, the Hawks had their reserves in, and they really weren't trying, if you will. But no, I'm with you. And here's the thing, Wizards fans, you know, you can't expect a whole lot out of this reserve group right now. They're very, very young. I mean, we're expecting, you know, people say stuff about Trey Burke. Trey Burke's only 23 years old. He came in the league
Very true.
early. That's what people have to realize. He's still very much developing, learning how this league works. Now he's trying to adjust, you know, being in the backup role, but expecting to play every single night and back up John Wall. So, you know, I think what I'm going to be looking for next game is really to see how much confidence and how assertive he is with, you know, getting the team in sets, because Jason Smith added after the game that he just thought, you know, half the players are doing one thing, half of them were doing another. And, you know, you as a bench rotation, you cannot be on a different page. So
very true.
The game will get out of hand. I totally forgot about our next segment that we're going to start doing, player of the game. We talked about this a little bit before. It's kind of already decided, but I'll let you go ahead and take the floor of who you're giving your player of the game for the Wizards for, and what you saw from him, and why you are excited for the rest of the season.
I'm very excited for Morris, mainly for the fact that, like I mentioned, he added 22 points. Without him, this game could have been terrible, even more so than it was in the fourth quarter. As far as offense goes, you like to see that. He wasn't really that impactful as far as the defense. I didn't really see that he got that many rebounds. But I like the fact that he definitely kept them in this game offensively. So when a night that you had John Wall, who only had 12 points, and, you know, we, as we already mentioned, was 3 for 15, you like to see that next guy that's going to step up. So I guess moving forward, you know, just imagine what the Wizards can become. If you can get him, you get Morris, you know, can contribute 15 to 20 points, and then you have John Wall actually doing what he would normally do. And then Bradley Beal, like I said, he was okay as well. Then this team is a completely different looking team, right? I mean, think about it. If John Wall wasn't so terrible from the field, this game could have definitely went a different direction. So I'm actually moving to a second point before I go back to Morris. That's one thing that I would like to tell the Wizards fans, because you have so many people, oh, man, we're going to have another long season again. No, I mean, they played Atlanta for those first three quarters, in my personal opinion, the best that they possibly could, given what they got. As you just mentioned, Atlanta's bench is way more experienced than Washington's. So when you given everything, you must say, okay, the Wizards played the Hawks to the best of their abilities. It was that fourth quarter. It was that mismatch. It was that fact that the Atlanta had their starters in versus the Wizards bench, and that definitely didn't work out. And maybe that can go back on coaching. Maybe when Scott Brooks saw that Atlanta had their starters in, he maybe should have called a timeout after the first two possessions. Like, hey, John Wall, Bradley Beal, everybody get back in there, or whatever the case may be. But he didn't. He kind of left the bench in a little longer, maybe didn't expect it. But he did have to go back to that first unit. And after that, it was nothing you could do. So to get back to the question, yeah, I would say definitely Marquise Morris definitely would be my player of the game. And also, I will take my hat off to John Wall. Despite having a shooting night, he continued just like a shooter should. He kept shooting, and he did keep the offense going with his 10 assists. So we cannot, you know, forget about that. Yeah, he may not have found the bottom of the basket like he would want it to, but at the same time, he continued to make his presence be felt out there by finding open looks for his teammates and creating looks. Because one thing about John Wall, he's one of those players where, regardless of how he's shooting from the field, you're going to hold him. You're going to try your best to, you know, have a defensive presence on him. So by him being a threat on the court in that regard and being able to get his teammates open and finding them open looks and them finding the bottom of the basket, you know, take my hat off to him too. So I won't jump, you know, too hard on John Wall for that. Again, I think when we move into the second part of the conversation about Memphis, I think we should see a better performance from John Wall. And if everyone can maintain what they did in Atlanta and do a little better, as you mentioned, Kelly Oubre with his defense, he you know, that whole hip check situation, I do remember exactly what you were talking about now that you say that. Yeah, you know, he definitely has to work on that. As far as the crowd noise, I forgot that you even mentioned that. I hope they get over that, because, I mean, it's going to be loud in every arena unless they play somewhere like Milwaukee, where it's hard to get your fans to come out and dead in the winter. It's going to be loud in Memphis. You know, that's Bluff City. The Grindhouse is going to be loud in Memphis. And they have yet to play, as you mentioned, in real loud places. I mean, if Atlanta is loud, man, I can only imagine what Oracle, Cleveland, Oklahoma City, you know, just to name a few. So I hope they get over that whole "it was loud" situation. I think that shit goes back to the whole chemistry. This is a young team. If you're a Wizards fan, please do not panic. Let's see how this team progresses through the next week. Let's see how they do at Memphis. Let's see how they do at home in their two home games against the Raptors and the Hawks. And then from there, we can start drawing a few conclusions as to where this team is going. But definitely Morris is my player of the game, 22 points on the night.
Yeah, and You know, the thing that impressed me the most about Mars is how he got his 22 points. I wrote about it on Fox Sports 1340 AM. Please go check it out. But the way he scored it. So, you know, there were situations where he was catching the ball at the high post, facing towards the basket, taking his man off the dribble, finishing with a pull up, or taking it all the way to the cup. There were times where he would just, you know, do a post up on the block, use a post move and score that way. And the good thing to me was, you know, he did connect on two of his three threes, which is good. And, you know, and how he did it. The one, I'm pretty sure it was a pick and pop. You know, he popped to the top of the key, and then there was another on a fast break where he had to hurry up and set his feet on a kick out from Wall. I just, you know, I really liked what I saw from him. You know, as I said in our first episode, I said he's not really a guy who's going to scare you from three, but more, you know, towards the 20-foot range, maybe out to there. But if he can get that three hitting consistently, as I said in the first episode, it's going to open up so much for this team, including Wall, including Beal. So I that's something that I'm really going to look forward to seeing him do as we move forward with the season. But yeah, you're right. You know, when John Wall, Bradley Beal, when they're having their average games, which obviously wasn't what we saw in the opener, you know, this will turn into some wins for the Wizards. Yeah, so no worries there. Moving on to what they have next in front of them, the Memphis Grizzlies. You know, they're coming off a very big win off the Minnesota Timberwolves, a team that, you know, has gotten all the hype this summer. Some people even have them winning close to 50 games. And it looked like it in the beginning of the game. They went up 16-1 on the Grizzlies, and the Grizzlies fought back. I think that's something that cannot be overlooked. Now, the Grizzlies do play tonight at New York. That's another thing to make note of. The Wizards will have them on a back end of a back-to-back, so hopefully they can take advantage of that. Few notes before I ask for your opinion, Josh. Mm-hmm. You know, Mike Conley had a great game, 24 points, 4 assists. He really just carried the scoring load for him. But something that's going to get overlooked that, you know, the Wizards really need to watch out for is Zach Randolph. They have him coming off the bench now, and you know, he still is getting his double double, finish with 19 points and 11 rebounds. I think this can be a game that we really see. That we really miss the absence of Jan Mahimi, because, you know, he's kind of a perfect guy to throw at Randolph when Gasol's not in. So, you know, we're going to see – we saw Andrew Nicholson do a decent job going in and not necessarily, you know, blowing away anybody, but, you know, just staying solid, you know, getting his – you know, getting his rebounds as much as he could while he was in there with the second group. And then, you know, as we said, shooting efficiently. So he's definitely going to be dependent upon. So, you know, the Grizzlies, a tough team. We know they're gonna play defense. We know they're gonna play. You know, they're gonna try to slow down the game. What do you see? What are your expectations for this game tomorrow night?
I'm concerned about the second unit. I'm a little concerned about the second unit. Even when you look at the guard play, you look at Wade Baldwin, the fourth. I know he's their rookie with the Memphis Grizzlies, but I'm a little concerned how the Washington Wizards second unit is going to match up.
Quick note. Wade Baldwin last game, 7 points, 6 assists, 5 rebounds, Swiss Army knife. I guess they throw Oubre on him. That's going to be a matchup for him. I don't know if you go Burke. Burke, I think, is a little too small for a guy like Wade Baldwin. Huge, you know, huge wingspan and a big guard in general. But yeah, I definitely, you know, he's going to be a tough guard.
He's going to be a tough guard. So, like, when you talk about that X factor, it's crazy that I'm saying this. When you talk about the X factor, that's who I would pick as my X factor. Because, you know, who's going to defend him? You know, I mean, we noticed with Kelly Oubre, and no knock at Kelly, but he has to learn how to control himself. That is my biggest worry about Kelly. I think the basketball knowledge is there. I think that he has the ability to, you know, he can dunk, he can defend, you know, he even got a shot. So, you know, those things are there and they will continue to improve. But it's that ability to be able to keep your temperament when you're down and you want to try to hold defense, and you know this is very critical that you don't want your opponent to score. You don't want to foul them when it's 8 seconds left in the shot clock. So guarding a guy like Wade Baldwin, that you mentioned, I think Wade Baldwin is, what, 6'4", with a 6'11 wingspan or something like that? Yeah, so that's going to be my X factor. I want to know what is Scottie Brooks' plan for his second unit, because I think John Wall is going to be okay. I think Bradley Beal is going to be okay. I think the first unit is going to be okay, but I think that second unit is definitely going to have some problems with those guys in the Memphis Grizzlies. As you mentioned, and this is something that I harped on even in our first show, the one advantage that I think the Wizards will definitely have, they had two nights off. They didn't play yesterday and they're not playing today, so they're getting a chance to enjoy that nice 83 degree weather barbecue, Mississippi River, Memphis, Tennessee. You know, I can't wait to get there. They are enjoying all of that tonight. And they don't get a chance to kick back at the hotel and watch the Grizzly play the New York Knicks, Derrick Rose and Mark Carmelo Anthony. So the Memphis will be on a quick turnaround after playing in New York so late at night, 8 o'clock Eastern, and then coming back to Memphis and getting ready to host the Wizards the very next day. That will be the one advantage that they will have. But outside of that, yeah, that's my X factor. If that's a new segment we could add to the show, who is the X factor? Yeah, Wade Baldwin the fourth. I'm definitely curious to see who's going to defend him on that second unit, because I don't see anybody that's going to be able to stop him. And if he had those kind, he had that type of stat line with the Timberwolves, and if he can actually dominate this second unit, I mean, you know, he might have a 20-point game like that. And that's not even overdoing it. Like, he could very well dominate by himself. Like, if Kelly Oubre cannot control him, because you're right, I think Trey Burke is a little too small, because Wade Baldwin just is a little too big. He looks like a linebacker. I don't know if you see him in person. He's a really big guy. So, yeah, that's my X factor, Wade Baldwin. Who's going to defend him, and who's going to stop him?
Here's my thing. I mean, yeah, Wade's going to have an impact on the game. I don't know if he's going to be a deciding factor of when they whether they win or lose or not, but he can be a guy. You know, I mean, as we saw, I don't think he's capable of scoring 20 yet. I mean, of course, the guy has, you know, tremendous skill, but you know, like a Tim Hardaway Jr. without 21 points. Wade's obviously going to contribute in other categories as well, but we saw, I'm not saying he plays like Tim Hardaway Jr. either, people. I'm just saying that his impact on the game off the bench. But in a vacuum, I think this is a good opportunity for the Wizards bench to kind of get back on their feet, kind of right their wrongs from the first game, because when you look at it, the Grizzlies are not a deep team. I mean, that was the big, you know, argument with this team. You know, of course, they added Chandler Parsons, who's still out with a knee injury, to kind of solidify their, you know, starting five and that missing wing that they've been missing for years. But the thing about it is, the one argument was, if one of them get hurt, as in Conley, Gasol, or Parsons, it's going to be trouble with them making the playoffs, because they just have no depth. I mean, here's some guys that, you know, they're coming off their bench with. Of course, we just talked about Baldwin. You have Randolph, who's going to be, you know, a very big presence. And then you have Vince Carter. Vince Carter's respectable, you know, maybe 5 years ago. Now, you know, he played 28 minutes last game, scored 3 points. He's not a guy that's going to kill you. Deontay Davis only had 6 minutes. So they really only go eight deep. If the Wizards can push the tempo on a team that does not like to run, I think it's I think it'll work out in their favor. So it's definitely going to be something to watch. We have plenty of things to watch for the second game after seeing what happened in the opener. You know, as you know, just to kind of wrap this up, you know, we're going to be watching the bench. We're going to see if Wall can kind of, you know, get back on track with his scoring wise. It's going to be tough with a big body like Gasol down in the paint. But I think if they can, you know, what I noticed in the game against the Hawks as well is, which isn't really different from what Whitman did last year, but Brooks, I mean, every possession, it was a ball screen for Wall. Just give Wall the ball. Gortat, go set him something and let him set up. And I really don't mind that. I think that's their best. Their best strategy. If he can string Gasol out past the 3-point line somehow, maybe get the switch. You know, obviously that's a recipe for success. But yeah. So everybody, the Wizards play the Grizzlies tomorrow, 8 p.m. I'm sorry, 8 p.m. Eastern time. And, you know, those are certain things that we'll be looking for. So we're going to move on to our next segment, which is questions. want to remind you guys.
One second. Before you go, I want to make sure the Wizards fans don't send me hate mail. I'm not saying that Wade Baldwin is going to be the deciding factor in the game, because I'm sure people are going to be like, who is this guy? Is he crazy? No, that's not what I was necessarily saying. I was just looking at the second unit. If they produce what they did down in Atlanta, if they go over to Memphis and have a repeat of performance, I was basically saying, you're right. In addition to Randolph, Wade Baldwin IV is going to have a field day. But I'm not saying he's definitely going to be the deciding factor. Oh, no, he's a few years from that. But I'm saying, don't be surprised if you see a Tim Hardaway Jr.-like performance if that second unit of the Wizards come out like they did in Atlanta in the fourth quarter.
I got you. Don't worry, Josh. But no, like I said, he has the ability to control the rebounding. You know, the rebounding category as a guard, he can get his teammates involved, as we saw in the first game. And you know, he'll score here and there. He's not a big scorer, but they have Zach Randolph for that in that second line. So that's who's getting the ball for the majority of the time. So now we're going to move on to our question segment. You know, guys, if feel free to send us questions. You can either send it to me on Twitter at Kobe Jacobino, you know, at the real Josh Vincent. Did I get that right, Josh?
No, I think it's just the Josh A. Vincent. Yeah.
The Josh A. Vincent. I'm sorry. I thought maybe somebody made a parody account.
You never know.
And then also, guys, you know, you can send them to 1340 AM Fox Sports. We will address them every show. Obviously, we just started out not getting a ton of questions yet, but we did get a few. You know, Brian Waters asked if, you know, he's asking, will John Wall be traded before the season's over? If you don't mind, I want to take this one first, because there has been a lot of speculation on that. Just rumors, you know, and it's something, I think it's definitely something to pay attention to, because Wall is such an elite player. And we're kind of watching his years just go, you know, right by in front of us. And, you know, you got to ask that question. When will John Wall, I guess, be fed up? And I think that's what Brian was asking. Just, is he happy with the team? From what I gained from John, you know, with media day, after practice, stuff like that, he's not as frustrated as you would think. Mm-hmm. But I think the only way he maybe demands a trade this season is if they, you know, in the first half of the season, 42 games, they're winning 15, and they're one of the worst teams in the East. Then, you know, I maybe think those rumors start to get a little bit louder. But until then, you know, the Wizards are his team. It's his show to run. Everybody knows that. I don't think this is something too big of a cause for concern. I think if they don't make the playoffs this season and they're struggling in the first part of next season – yeah, it can become, you know, very realistic. But, you know, I just want to get your opinion, Josh. What do you think on the matter?
You know, first of all, I'll say you had a lot of these quote-unquote blog sites writing some of the craziest trade rumors that I've ever seen. I've seen people saying that the Bulls are going to trade back for Derrick Rose. I'm like, oh, are you? Like, I've seen some of the craziest trades. So,
clickbait. We know that. We know these sites have clickbait. I saw one the other day that said the Lakers are going to trade D'Angelo Russell and Julius Randle for John Wall.
Yeah, right. Well, who is that? Was that the Inquisitor?
The Inquisitor. Not to out anybody, but I mean, it gets to a point where you have to be realistic, and some of these sites are just literally pulling things from thin air and just making up rumors. And you can't respect that.
And you know, that's why I think that I'm a big guy that calls people out. And I'm gonna tell you why. Because if you're gonna, this is my thing. If you're gonna be a journalist or a blogger or whatever the case may be, and you wanna get on a website and you wanna proclaim that you are credible, I feel as though we should call you out on something. Now, it's one thing when you make a mistake, right? We make mistakes. Like if I accidentally call Morris's twin brother name or something like that. Okay, cool. That's just a mistake. When you go out there and you write a story that they're going to trade D'Angelo Russell and Jordan Clarkson for John Wall, I feel like we should know your name and we should put your picture. If like once we get big time, we'd be able to put people pictures up on our podcast and things of that nature. We should put their picture up and say, this is who said that. But to answer the question, to be serious for a moment, but to answer the question, I don't really think anything into it. I will agree with you on that. I think if this season start going haywire where, you know, the Wizards are looking like they're going to be in 10th or 11th place, John Wall may start bumping his gum saying, hey, I want to be out. I can see that happening. But right now, after one game, this is still a young team. The stakes are pretty high. I mean, they could go anywhere, right? Anywhere from not making it to the playoffs as high as 4 or 5 in the East. I think John Wall is going to buy into the system. I mean, you have to give this time to grow, right? Like, this is a brand new coach. You saw what he done in Oklahoma City. So you have to at least, I mean, I wouldn't even say this season, you would have to at least give it an entire season before you just want out, right? You know, that would be unfair to yourself, in my opinion, to want out so quickly when this is a brand new system that they have in place there in Washington. So I'll watch it from afar. I wouldn't really say it's something that is intimate or anything like that. But I'm definitely, you know, thinking that some of these sites come up with some of the craziest blogs. And I mean, comes not the blogs, but they come up with some of the craziest trades, you know. Just to make a quick note, let me ask you a question, actually, when we're done asking questions. Do you think the Spurs are still going to trade LaMarcus Aldridge after the game the Spurs had up in Golden State, right? You know, so it's just like you see these rumors, and there's no knocking none of these writers, but you see a lot of these rumors from these sources and things of that nature, and then you see the Spurs have a game like they had where first Golden State, and then you say, hey, you know.
The only reason why the – just real quick to touch on it, the LaMarcus Aldridge, I buy somewhat stock in that if I had to. Okay. Number one, it was reported by, you know, well, not reported, but Zach Lowe from ESPN brought it up. And number two, when you look at it from that point of view, Aldridge doesn't match what they're trying to do defensively. So okay. I could see if they were really struggling or if there was just, you know, if it picked up where it left off last season and just never got better, I see them trying to, you know, trying to do something else. But you know, even with them, it's like you said, it's one season. It's one season. You can't judge off something off one season and quickly trade off, you know, a guy like Aldridge, where what the Spurs will probably get some very good youth talent for him, but nothing that's going to add up to a player of his impact. And we saw him completely dominate the Warriors game one. So, yeah, of course, all those rumors go away. You know, in terms of the blogs, we won't even waste our time talking about them because I honestly don't think they deserve the time of day. So we're gonna move right on to our second question, and it comes from Byron at BKD_TV, and he asks, "How did the Washington Wizards stack up in the East? I'm sorry, after the 5-6 projected teams in the playoffs, do they make it in?" I think it's still way too early to answer that, but of course it's just one game. But you know, we talked about this a little bit in our first show. I think the best case scenario for this Wizards team is a 5th seed. I think they eventually sneak in around 7 or 8, and possibly, you know, they'll be 9th. But I think they're going to be within those. They're going to be fighting for the last playoff seed, no matter what happens. So. You know, if we see them play like they did the first game, if you want to judge it off first game, it doesn't look good because obviously their fourth quarter was so bad that is a huge, you know, reason for concern. But then you got to come back. It's one game. Don't jump to conclusions. I think if they get this bench rotation set together once Mahimni gets back, I don't think we can judge this team until Mahimni gets back. I think he's a a big decision maker on how far this team can go. So what do you think? Where do you think the Wizards stack up? Do you think they have a good chance?
I think their favors are. I think the favor is in their favor, if that makes sense. I think the odds are in their favor as well. I guess what I'm trying to say. When you look, I think to answer that question, you have to look across the East and see what other teams have going on. The biggest teams that, in my opinion, that's going to round out your 6th, 7th, and 8th, you know, 9th, 10th, you know, area. You look at teams like Chicago, you look at teams like Detroit, you look at teams like New York. And then, of course, you would look at Washington. In my personal opinion, I feel as though Washington has just as good a chance as the rest of those teams. I mean, New York, they have a nice start, you know, starting five, but their bench is absolutely terrible. You look at Chicago, yeah, Dwayne Wade had a great performance, but, you know, how many of those can we possibly expect? So it's one of those things where it's like, if the Wizards can, and I said this in our first show, if the Wizards can win games like they should win, like, again, they should have won a game in Atlanta. Anytime you play Atlanta that closely for three quarters, you should have won that game. You know, there's no reason they should have gave up 33 points. So it's one of those things where, in my personal opinion, I feel as though it's the Wizards' job to lose, not to get into the playoffs if they're not going to make it. I don't think they're not going to make it because the Knicks are going to be so dominant. I don't think they're not going to make it because Chicago is just going to be so dominant, or Milwaukee is going to somehow turn things around and get back in the playoffs, or Detroit is going to, you know, I don't think it's going to be because of that. I think it's going to be because of games like the one they had in Atlanta. Yes, granted, it's only one game, so I don't want to blow that out of proportion, but that's what I would tell Wizards fans, is that if the Wizards are not going to make it playoffs, they have to look back at themselves and say it's on us. It's not because any of these other teams in the East are so superior. I wouldn't say that at all. I still, if you had to say who would you put your money on, New York or Washington, Chicago or Washington, I'm putting my money on Washington. I mean,
I think in comparison to those teams, it's because those other teams, like you said, Chicago, New York, they have a lot of dominoes that need to fall in the right place for them, and they're heavy dominoes, if you will. Imagine massive dominoes, because number one, with New York, like you said, solid starting five, but absolutely no bench. Chicago, good outing, but again, those were one of those games where Boston's coming off a back-to-back. I'm not sure the exact percentage of it, but True Hoop TV, ESPN's podcast, did cover it. And I think it was a 76 or 82% chance that Chicago would win that game before it even happened because of the travel of, where Boston had to travel, the time their game ended the night before, all that they put into mind, and that's what they got. But with Chicago, like you said, how many big performances are winning it out of Wade this year? They still can't shoot. Nobody's going to fix that. That's not going to miraculously change overnight. The Wizards, if they can just get going, get somewhat good production off their bench, I think they're fine, because I think Wall, yeah, Beal, they're going to give you theirs. We see what Morris is capable of doing. Gortat is one of the most consistent, efficient big men in the game. And Porter, he's going to chime in. If he can even be consistent, all the merrier. But I think, I'm with you. I think they have a much better chance than those two teams you named. And I think they sneak in with the 7 or 8 seed.
Yeah. Yep. That's exactly what I think. So when it comes to that, again, I don't think it's because these teams in the East are so superior over the Wizards. I think it'll be really because the Wizards didn't win games that they should have won. And we'll see. We'll see what happens in Memphis tomorrow night.
And it will be a good one to watch. I think and another thing, Wizards fans, if they go up, if the Wizards go up 20-5 to open up the game, please do not think it's over, because we saw it before. The Grizzlies, yeah, will slowly but surely make themselves back in the game and possibly win it, as they did in the first game against Minnesota, a tough Minnesota team. So Josh, if you have anything else to add, we're gonna kind of wrap up here. I believe, just to touch on a little bit of general NBA stuff, we might do that for like the next 2 minutes. Russell Westbrook, you said his triple-double was not impressive. Why? Yeah. And I hope you're not anywhere near or going anywhere near Oklahoma City, because someone might come to you at the side of the highway and hijack your car.
That is so fun. Hey, Interstate 40 runs from Oklahoma City to Memphis, Tennessee. They can come right on down. I think that's a 6.5-hour drive. Come right on over to Memphis. I-40 eastbound. I'll be there. Hey, I'm not impressed. Anytime you have to take 44 shots to get 50 points, I'm not impressed. I am not impressed. Not at all. Yeah, and I was talking to a couple of my good friend about that. I was like, man, I think NBA Twitter is – let me go on a rant for just 2 minutes and then we can go. I cover both NBA and NFL. And people talk about the NFL all the time. We have our problems with the NFL. We do. But our Twitter, it seems like NFL Twitter, we tend to stay in check. We tend not to overblow things, right? like with the Dak Prescott, you know, he's doing well with the Cowboys. We're pretty tempered about it. Yeah, it's only week six, seven, whatever, you know, it was cool. But this NBA Twitter, I realize they love hot takes. They just want to amplify every single thing. And I'm sitting here and I'm like, okay, we know Westbrook from last season with Kevin Durant, and Westbrook had similar type performances because he would just shoot. So now KD decides he's going to the Warriors, and so Westbrook make this little commercial. Now I can do what I want with the stupid little dance that all the young kids are doing. Okay, now with that all being said, everybody is so impressed that Westbrook had 50-something points but took 44 shots. I mean, that's crazy. Do you know what his percentage was last night? Look it up. If it wasn't more than 30 or 35, that means that his percentage was just almost the same as John Wall's. And John Wall had 12 points. I mean, hey, if that's what NBA Twitter likes, I love it. You know what? Let me know, Kobe. You're more the analytical guy. Let me know, because I was not impressed.
Well,
I am impressed with Anthony Davis, though. I'm very impressed with Anthony Davis.
Here's my argument against what you just said. So, at the end of the day, Russell Westbrook shot 38.6%. Not terrible.
Okay.
When you look at it from how many shots that he did take 44 shots. 2 for 10 from three, not ideal. I'm not going to go as far as say I'm not impressed with it. I understand where you're coming from. Trust me. 44 shots, 50 points. I get it. But the man still had 51 points. What was it? 13 assists and maybe 10 rebounds, or is the other way around? Let me just do it just so I'm sure. 10 assists, 13 rebounds. Yes. I can't say that I'm not impressed when anybody does something like that. I mean, it's the first triple double with 50 points, I believe, since I can't remember the guy. I can't remember who it was. Now it was either Wilt or Kareem. I'm pretty sure it was Kareem. You know, but in terms of who, of course, Anthony Davis has had great showings. I think, you know, he's averaging to this date, I think, what is it, maybe 45 points